This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
How well is this all going to play in front of a jury eventually when we get there? Because, I mean, the truth of the matter and everything we've been arguing about that is just flat out, you know, just reality. Here's what was done wrong. Here's how the investigation wasn't accurate. Here's what was presented to the judge that wasn't accurate. I mean, a lot of things can come out just straight out to the jury that are just simply facts. Whether Judge Gull wanted to hear them or not, they will eventually make it out there. Number one, you have to rely on a jury that's going to understand what the hell is going on in all this because it's so deep. I mean, we get it. We're in that world every day. But if you're just like on the outside looking in, it's a sea of mess and you don't know where to even begin to try and understand or comprehend the path that this thing has gone down. With all the missteps here and all of the just bizarre, you know, rulings from Gull, how is that going to play out in the courtroom when Gull is proceeding over this very trial where a lot of, I think, these missteps are going to be brought up?
Yeah, and it's one of those things that what you hope is going to happen at trial is the procedural issues that we've all seen and been talking about for months now, in theory, have no place in the trial itself, you know? Yeah. So they're not going to be able to bring up the fact that, you know, the attorneys were removed and that they were reinstated because the Supreme Court said that the judge was, you know, way beyond her discretion in terms of removing them. Like those aren't going to be things that are going to be able to be addressed at trial. The trial is going to be limited to the facts and the evidence. Mm-hmm. And whatever the judge is deemed admissible, that'll get in. The question then becomes, have any of the attorneys, the state or the defense, had enough time, knowing that this thing is prepared to go to trial in just about a month, are they prepared?
Yeah.
But this, like you said, a case that has so many just tentacles, are they going to be able to put forth a cogent case where a jury who may not have any knowledge of the case at all,
yeah,
or the underlying facts or the Franks memo or the PCA, mm-hmm, that was put out by the state, and they're just like fresh unmolded pieces of clay, are they going to be able to, either side, be able to put on a cogent case,
yeah,
so that a jury can make heads or tails of what the hell is going on? I don't know, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I battle in my mind whether, if I'm the defense, if I'm filing a motion to continue it. And only they know, because they're the ones who are preparing for it. I mean, if you get to be 3 weeks out and you're looking at your case and you're like, oh my God, you know, there's so much here that, you know, we haven't been able to get our experts paid and we haven't been able to get the information to them to review it and prepare reports and inform us as to the way to question a DNA expert, the questions that we should ask their expert, the questions we should ask you, you know, the geofencing stuff, you know, it's like you need your experts to be able to look at that stuff and explain it to lawyers. That's why we hire expert witnesses, not only to explain it to a jury, but to explain it to the attorneys themselves. I mean, I'm no expert in any scientific field. Mm-hmm. I always relied on experts to explain things to me so that I had an understanding of what the hell I was talking about. So I could try to ask proper questions, both on direct examination and cross-examination. So, man, you got so many things going on with this thing. You know, the hope is that really for the girls and for Richard Allen, that everybody's prepared. Mm-hmm. At least in the sense that we're going to get a fair trial, because again, if this thing shakes out and it's just hot garbage, wherein both sides don't seem prepared to be at trial, we're going to be getting a redo,
yep,
you know, and no one wants that. No one wants the family members of the victims to have to sit through this thing again, to go through this thing again, you know, and because that just means more time, like the appeal. You know, the victim's families are sitting there, if he's convicted, you know, just waiting for the other shoe to drop from the appellate court oh my God, are they going to get another trial and we have to go through this all again? You know, it's like torturous, mm-hmm. you know, and it's like, I can't even begin to understand what it would feel like to have lost one of my kids in that way and have to keep reliving this nightmare over yeah. and over and over. So, you know, I mean, we'll see how it's going to play out, man. I'm nervous about the whole thing. You know, it's like I've said when we've talked on other occasions, you know, that speedy trial demand is very much a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. And when you've got just the issues of the magnitude that are going on in this case, and we know that the defense is going to be putting on an alternate suspect defense, I mean, that's a lot of work, man, you know, and it's like you're going to be hearing in its essence, two separate cases. You're going to be hearing the state's case, which is that Richard Allen is the guy, and this is the evidence that we have of it. And then you're going to be hearing in the defensive side of it, we think it's these guys, mm-hmm. these, and this is the evidence that we have that it's these guys, you know, so like you're talking about two separate trials on top of the attacks that are going to be taking place on law enforcement's investigation into this and, mm-hmm. and how shoddy it may have been. And, you know, that we can't trust that evidence. It's just, it is a huge amount to prepare for. So, you know, like for everybody involved, I'm nervous about this thing going in a month, man, because it's just, it's a lot to handle.
Refresh me on this. There's no cameras in the courtroom for this, right?
Not so far. I mean, she can always change her mind. Yeah. I mean, there's certainly a lot of pressure on her from a lot of different angles coming at her saying, you know, this thing should be televised, you know, for transparency's sake. It's, you know, in my position on it is especially in light of everything that has gone on.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of a case that really deserves to be, needs to be broadcast to the public more than this case.
Yeah.
You know, it's the case that has been in, I love it in the sense that it has brought forth procedural issues that the true crime community typically is not looking at. Mm-hmm. You know, we have gone on through our lives watching true crime content for years, having no idea, little to no idea what happens pre-trial. And yeah. I've been saying since I've become a creator on my podcast and more recently on YouTube that, look, the real wars in any case are fought during this time. And yeah. now people are seeing it firsthand. People are shocked by it. Mm-hmm. But this is where the battles are fought. This yeah. is where what evidence is going to get in, what evidence is going to be kept out. You know, this is where you see all that happening. And now it's becoming commonplace. We're seeing it in the Idaho 4 case. We're seeing all the pretrial battles and wars that go on between the state and the defense. We're seeing it in Delphi. We're seeing it in Karen Reed. That did not exist prior to this. Mm-hmm. When you look at Court TV, they did not show pretrial hearings mm-hmm. ever. You know, now they're commonplace. And as an attorney, I love it because this is showing the American people what the process really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and beyond that, it's also showing the people what I've been screaming from the rooftops again since I started making content, which is, look, the way that the process has worked, the criminal justice system has worked forever, is that the state gets their theory thrown out there always mm-hmm. ahead of time, which is incredibly prejudicial because it's typically not countered. Mm-hmm. Typically, the defense isn't able to get their theory of the case. And remember, it's just theories. This is not tested evidence.
Yeah.
When you see a probable cause affidavit, that is not vetted, tested evidence. That is evidence that was collected by law enforcement that has not been vetted at trial, meaning that witnesses are put under cross-examination to see whether or not they're reliable, to see if the evidence collected, if it was collected properly, does it mean what the state says that it means? Mm-hmm. Like, all those things have to happen at trial, and it's the only place that it can happen. So what you've seen here, especially in Karen Reed and especially in Delphi, are those two things, that the defense in both those cases has gotten their theory of defense out, and you have seen two camps just divide. Yeah. Unlike in any other case, like Koberger to a little bit of the same extent, but not to the extent that Karen Reed and Delphi are, where you've got these two camps and both that are saying he's guilty or he's innocent should both not be saying that. We have to wait until trial. None of us know. Mm-hmm. You can certainly have a feeling that I think that the evidence that they're saying that they have leans guilty. I think that he's guilty based on what he said, but I'm reserving my final judgment until trial happens. And same with the people that are claiming he's innocent. We can't know until trial happens, period. But I like, I love this concept because it really does even the playing field, but it's blown people's minds. Mm-hmm. You know, people are so unaccustomed to hearing the defense getting their theory out pre-trial that it's made people feel uncomfortable with the situation. And it shouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. The state shouldn't be the ones to be able to just get their theory out, because it's highly prejudicial. Everyone that hears one side of a story is, of course, going to think that that person is guilty because it's unchecked.
Yeah.
It's just out there. Look, this is all the evidence we have, without it ever being tested until trial. And of course, that's going to prejudice a jury. So I love the fact that it's gone down this way as a defense attorney, because I really do believe it creates a more even playing field going into trial.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.